There it is. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We're here today to have fun and a good time. And
could you describe the pictures so that people will understand?
Okay, well, this is a, I guess he's a little, what'd you say, he's a donkey?
Yeah.
With a big eyes and a big grin on his face, and he's saying, good morning. And this is our introductory picture, and it's our title is Success in Our Environment and Personal Relationships. And Judy did an absolutely fantastic job the last time around on this chapter, and this is a very small chapter, and she covered it beautifully. So. Because of that, I'm taking a lot of license with this one.
Yeah.
but I did want to read something from Ernest Holmes in this chapter that I read it and I said, oh no. It says, don't read about and don't talk to anybody about limitation. That's what, I like that. Don't read about divorce, murders, robberies, and accidents. As far as you're concerned, there are no such things. The newspapers are not fit to read. Don't let horrid stories enter your consciousness. Go through a process of self-analysis. We are here, we are because of what we have done, because of the subjective that we allow to flow through us. Everything is impersonal. Size up the situation. If you lack, if you are poor, if you are without money, without the right position, if you are without all these things, don't fight anything. Just erase from your own consciousness anything that approaches a sense of lack. Well, I read that and I thought, well, there goes NCIS. I don't read the newspapers. I don't watch the news. But, I mean, NCIS, Yellowstone. Oh, well. So I just wanted to share that with you because that one was kind of a. And Connie's comment on the email that we got, she said this chapter is about consciously building the consciousness we choose to bring to our lives in the world. And this reminds me of the mental equivalent, law of attraction, power of deliberate intent. Now these are the three little monkeys that everybody's probably seen in the past. It's hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. And that basically says it all, doesn't it? So the next slide. Whoops, it passed up over here. Come on, there it is. This is from Abraham Hicks, and I thought this one was real suitable for this topic. It says, that's the thing that trips you all up. I want this thing I do not have. I want this thing I do not have. I want this thing I do not have. And you don't make any headway. But if you say, I want this thing, I like this thing, I enjoy this thing, I like this experience. I'm taking pleasure from the idea of this. Then the resistance goes away and the natural progression or evolution of it from thought to full-blown manifestation has to come. And this reminded me of something that I heard on one of the Law of Attraction tapes. And Jerry was saying to Esther, so you still got that thing going on about floors? And Esther says, I care about floors. And Jerry said, if you could just forget about them, we might have beautiful floors. I never forget when I hear that. I thought that was great. And this is another Abraham Hicks, and this says, I have this one up on my refrigerator as a reminder. Talk about what you do want. Or think about what you do want. Don't think about what you don't want. Talk about what you do want. Don't talk about what you don't want. Tell everyone about what you do want. and tell no one about what you don't want. Make lists of the things that have worked, and don't talk about the things that do not work. That's one to really remind people. It's so easy to get into conversations with other people, and suddenly, you know, the conversation may turn into talking about something you don't really want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I have to remind myself, always remember to turn it to what you really do want to talk and think about. This is kind of an odd angle to the projector, and so it's hard to get it to change right away. Now, this isn't me, but...
It's
back,
not?
It's not me, no. But back in, I guess it was about, let's see, about 1995, 1996, I had worked for a year with a program in Fairfax County as their project manager, and the program was called Senior EmployNet, and it was getting seniors jobs in the community. And I turned that program around, did a really fantastic job, and they were really happy with it. But the funding came to an end, so I was looking for another job. I saw an ad in the paper with a company called Maximus. I had no idea how big Maximus was. I just knew they had this job. They were looking for project managers and assistant project managers for a program called Fairfax Works. And it was a welfare to work program, getting people off of welfare and into jobs. And I said, you know, I could do that. And I had absolutely no, I was so excited. And I sent my resume in, and I got an appointment to go and meet with them. And I wore my red suit, and I had red and black shiny shoes on. I mean, I was just dressed to the T. So I get there, and all these women that are waiting for interviews, they're wearing navy blue suits, they're wearing black suits, high heels. I mean, they were dressed very professionally. Here I am in this red suit. So when I go in for the interview, there's a panel of like six people. They're, you know, not the CEO, but executives down the line, but also including the director of human resources. And I wasn't daunted at all. You know, I went in there just totally, I just knew that I had a job with this company. That's it. I had the job. So, and I got it. I got the job. And it was really, really great program with four offices around Fairfax County. And I was, my first job was as assistant project manager, had a tremendous boss, was just really great. Eventually, I was sent to Lake County, California as a project manager. And then when I came back a year and a half later, I was project manager of Fairfax Works over the four offices. But in the very beginning, that here I was, and I got hired. And what was funny was later, the human resources director said to me, she says, I knew you were totally confident when I saw you wearing that red suit. And you know, and afterwards, yeah. I could see that, you know, everybody at Maximus are all, you know, everybody's wearing their professional clothes, and so this chapter reminded me that, you know, you just know something, and when you just know something, it's it, you know it. You know, David, maybe you can do this one. If you can do these, maybe you'll get... No, it's not that. It's at a wrong angle.
Well, no, it's the batteries aren't good, so you shake them up a little bit.
I think it's...
Make a connection.
Okay. So here's our little praying mantis up on a little toadstool or a flower. And it says, my path is to understand the mysteries of the universe and spread the message of hope, joy, peace, and light through art, inspiration, guidance, and love.
Would you read that again?
My path is to understand the mysteries of the universe and to spread the message of hope, joy, peace, and light through art, inspiration, guidance, and love.
That makes me cry.
Whoops, how did he get in there? Lavanya, he must have been, you must have drawn that guy in with your song. This is also from Abraham Hicks, and this one is about laughter. It says, along with laughter and fun today, I want to share with you some things about our environment. This is part of the title of our chapter. The first will, oh, I didn't read the, what it said. Let me start back over. Abraham Hicks saying is, laughter may be the most profound state of alignment that exists. Laughter is your first impulse when you reemerge into non-physical, and you realize how idiotically,
seriously,
you've been taking all this stuff. In that final recognition of the well-being of you and the worthiness of you and the value of you, there will be a laughing fest, the likes of which you have not yet experienced in this physical form. I love that. It was great. So then I said, along with laughter and fun today, I want to share with you some things about our environment. This is part of the title of our chapter. The first will be about water, as presented in a book called The Hidden Messages in Water by Masaru Emoto, a Japanese scientist. The second will be about the circle of life, as described regarding the birds, the bees, and other pollinators, and how they impact our environment, and how important native pollinator plants are. So this is a falcon in a tree. And this picture is a big old tree, and then there's a Ford Falcon is sitting up in the top of the branches. I thought we'd share a little light comedy before we get into the water part. And these two old ladies are at a funeral, and one says, "Tragic, really. He died because no one knew his blood type. I'll never forget the last inspirational words he whispered to me. Be positive." And this is an old lady, and hair and curlers, and in her little bathrobe, and she says, "I went to McDonald's today and ordered a Happy Meal. The guy asked me if I wanted a boy toy. I smiled and said, 'Honey, you're too young to apply for that job.'" Here's a bunch of old ladies sitting on a couch, and one says, "I heard the more colorful the salad is, it's better for you. So I swapped my croutons for M&Ms. Okay. Now down to a little bit more serious stuff, and this is introducing this book, The Hidden Messages in Water, and I have the book here if anyone wants to see it afterwards. I thought that was the most beautiful picture of the water and the sky reflected in the water. And this says, "No amount of money, oil, or gold is worth more than the bees, trees, and clean water." Mm-hmm. This is a beautiful, serene picture with a crane. Very, very, very peaceful. Kind of has an oriental look to it as well. And the story and the hidden messages in water, let me read a few of the items in here to you that he says. He has a very positive attitude toward life, and you'll hear some of that as I go along. I guess for years he had been studying different aspects of water and he was looking for an answer. He said he noticed all the chaos and discontent and discord around the world, and he wanted to come up with a simple solution as to how to make that change into more positive. And he said he thinks he found the answer, and he says, just this, the average human body is 70% water. We start out life being 99% water as fetuses. When we are born, we are 90% water, and by the time we reach adulthood, we are down to 70%. If we die of old age, we'll probably be about 50% water. In other words, throughout our lives, we exist mostly as water. He says, modern researchers have shown that the condition of the mind has a direct impact on the condition of the body. So he said, when your emotions flow throughout your body, you feel a sense of joy and you move towards physical health. Moving, changing, flowing, this is what life is all about. More now than in the past, the medical community has begun to see water as a transporter of energy. And then he begins to talk about homeopathy and how that works. And he says that homeopathy proposes that the greater the dilution, the greater the effectiveness. Now, the logical conclusion would be the denser the poison in the body, the higher should be the dilution ratio. But in reality, another way to express this idea is instead of the effect of the matter being used to get rid of the symptoms, the information copied to the water is being used to cancel out the information of the symptoms from the poison. So water has the ability to copy and memorize information. And he said the understanding of that actually changed his life. So the water has the ability to copy and memorize information. So he started experimenting with freezing water and forming crystals and then photographing the crystals. And he said, first I looked at the crystals of tap water from different locations. The water of Tokyo was a disaster. Not a single complete crystal was formed. However, within natural water, no matter where it came from, natural springs, underground rivers, glaciers, and the upper reaches of rivers, complete crystals formed. And there's one on the screen. So then he and his assistants got the idea to see what would happen if they exposed water to music. We'll move on to another crystal here. Let's see if we missed one here. He said all of the classical music that we exposed the water to resulted in well-formed crystals with distinct characteristics. In contrast, the water exposed to violent heavy metal music resulted in fragmented and malformed crystals at best. There's a couple of pictures of that in here. Find the right ones. There's the what the crystal looks like when they play classical music, and they played Mozart. And this was the crystal. Very beautiful picture. And the very next one is a very distorted, cloudy crystal. And this is the one from when they played the heavy metal music. And it's also similar to when they put words on. And words like "you fool" got the same kind of a crystal. Something very distorted and cloudy. So when they started experimenting with words, what they did is they would write things on pieces of paper and wrap the paper around the bottle of water. And they would write things like thank you and fool and gratitude and love and see what the different crystals look like. And he said it didn't seem logical for water to read the writing, understand the meaning, and change its form accordingly. but I knew from the experiment with music that strange things could happen. He said, the results of the experiments didn't disappoint us. Water exposed to thank you formed beautiful hexagonal crystals, but water exposed to the word fool produced crystals similar to the water exposed to heavy metal music, malformed and fragmented. Further experimenting showed that the water exposed to positive expressions like let's do it created attractive, well-formed crystals, but that water exposed to negative expressions like do it barely formed any crystals at all. He said, the lesson that we can learn from this experiment has to do with the power of words. The vibration of good words has a positive effect on our world, whereas the vibration from negative words has the power to destroy. Where did we go here? Did the electricity go out by the
thing? I think it
thing?
Did because the lights. Were they on?
Yeah, the lights were on. No. Well, let me go on without the pictures then.
Let's see this remote.
Hmm?
Let's try again.
Okay, so well,
I have a feeling you're
there. See if you can get it going. He said water had probably the delicacy of the human soul and the impact that love and gratitude can have on the world. Words are an expression of the soul. Okay, well, we'll continue on. Love and gratitude are the words that must serve as the guide for the world. He came up with the most beautiful crystal was for love and gratitude. All the pictures are here in this book, and you can kind of see some of them. You might want to look at these afterwards. This one is from modern jazz, and this one is from the heavy metal. And he says, our emotions and feelings have an effect on the world moment by moment. If you send out words and images of creativity, then you will be contributing to the creation of a beautiful world. However, emitting messages of destruction, you contribute to the destruction of the universe. If you become aware of this, you will no longer be able to speak words of anger to those around you, or blame others for your own mistakes and weaknesses. You have the capacity to change the world within a moment. All you must do is make a simple choice. Are you going to choose a world of love and gratitude, or a tortured world filled with discontent and impoverishment? The answer will depend on your attitude at this very moment. And he says, understanding that everything exists in this one moment will give hope and light to your life. You no longer need to be troubled by the past and can know that the future can be anything that you will it to be. You, as you are, in this very moment, hold the key to everything.
Maybe if you give them to me. Oh, no, you have to read them, don't you?
Some of them I do. This is the one. This was what he said was the most perfect crystal, that was love and gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow,
that's nice.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, that was the most beautiful. Mm. This one was just called natural water.
Mm-hmm.
This was Mozart and heavy metal. See the difference? And I don't know what this one was in particular. It was a very beautiful one. And this was something else that was in the book that I wanted to share. And this was on Einstein. And this was a quote from Einstein. He said, "We are slowed down sound and light. We are slowed down sound and light waves, a walking bundle of frequencies tuned into the cosmos. We are souls dressed up in sacred biochemical garments, and our bodies are the instruments through which our souls play their music." And Einstein's theory of relativity, which most is very famous, is C equals MC squared. And Professor Emoto says we can also interpret C as consciousness instead of the speed of light. Since M represents mass, we can interpret it as the number of people consciously focused. And he says the combined will of many people can act as a force to change the universe. The words from your mouth have a power of their own that influences the entire world. We can even say that the words that teach us about nature are the words of the Creator. If we fill our lives with love and gratitude for all, this consciousness will become a wonderful power that will spread throughout the world. And he says, and this is what the water crystals are trying to tell us. Love and gratitude. If we all want to take a break. Okay, so if you don't know what to do with your jeans, this is our native plant section of the almond. Of the top. So you can stuff your jeans with plants. And this one of Mount Rushmore, it says, you know, there are some things you just never think of, like Mount Rushmore from the Canadian side. It has all the backsides showing. It says, you don't stop laughing because you get old. You get old because you stop laughing. Oh. Did you know that trees get arthritis too? Here's a picture of a tree that's all twisted up, all the way from the roots all the way up to the top. And this shows the amazing power of healing. Here's a tree that's just all smooth and all branches are all nice, man. And it has beautiful wisteria covering the whole tree. Wow. That one's called the Amazing Power of Healing. Earlier this year, this catalog came in the mail for me, and this really was great because I've been seeing so many things online about how the bee population has been going down, and all about how planting native gardens. And I'd been in landscaping for like 25 years. I had never worked with native plants. It just wasn't part of what we did, you know. And when I thought about it, and after I started reading all these books on native plants, I realized that all the plants that we landscapers were planting are all foreign plants. They're from Asia, Africa, and all over different places. They're not natural to our environment, and they're basically there for foundation plantings and aesthetics and just for the beauty of the plants, but they don't do the job that the native plants do. So when I got this catalog and started reading the inside of it, it really it intrigued me, and it just rang a bell for me and actually started me on a path of growing native plants. And once I understood the whole process and why it's so important, it really made a lot of sense to me. inside the catalog is this picture of a poster. I tried to get it blown up to where I could read it. If I thought about it, I should have ordered it a couple of weeks ago, and I would have had the poster in order to get the words. But basically what it talks about, it's called the Circle of Life, and it says the foundation of our ecosystem is rooted in native plants. 90% of insects, including pollinators, require a native plant host to complete their life cycle. Native plants co-evolved with native insects and wildlife. They are deeply dependent on one another. And that is the part that is so vital, is the fact that chemically they harmonize together, the native plants and the native life forces that are here in our areas. And while the other kind of plants, like you may see birds and butterflies and bees on plants that are non-natives that have nectar in them, and they can sustain their life, but they can't reproduce. So, for example, the monarch butterfly is almost extinct, and the reason for that is the fact that it can only reproduce on a plant that's in the milkweed family. If it's not the butterfly weed or one of the milkweeds, it cannot lay its eggs and develop the caterpillars and the chrysalis, and it cannot reproduce. And part of why they're going extinct is because we've taken away so much of their habitat, of destruction of the forest, destruction of areas to build. And also pesticides. Pesticides is one of the really big things with the bees and the pollinators. And you know, I've been seeing a lot of this, and I wanted to do something positive about it. I don't like to feed into all the negative stuff that goes on, and then with the politics and all this. That's why we really need to focus on the positive things of what we can do, and the good that's going on in our world. And there is a whole lot of good going on with native plant societies and native nurseries. They're springing up all over the place. And so what I did, as soon as I got really interested in all this, is I found a native plant nursery. It's not too far from where I live. And in the middle of summer, where nobody plants anything, they had a big 40% off sale. So I went and invested $200 in native plants, and they're not planted yet. I'm growing them, and you know, I've already changed them into like two or three different size pots, because they're just not, it's not a good time to put them in when we still have the hot weather. And I've been reading a lot of books on the whole life cycle and how bees develop and the whole process. It's wonderful, really, really interesting. Plants provide food and shelter to insects, birds, and other small animals, which in turn support larger predators. Native plants are building blocks, fundamental stepping stones of a healthy ecosystem. Isn't he cute?
He's adorable. Is that a prairie dog?
It looks like a prairie dog, and he's rubbing his little face on a flower.
Hey, no, he's actually hugging.
He looks like he's taking a deep
breath.
Yeah.
Deep
yeah.
breath.
Yes. With his eyes closed.
And gratitude,
yes.
He's like, can't come
inside. Parent birds must gather thousands of insects to raise a single clutch of their babies. So we need the insects in order to feed them at the different levels, because it goes beyond the birds and it goes to the mammals. Those are one of my favorites, the cardinals. Mm-hmm. And here's a little baby bird in his nest. It looks like the first one born.
And blue eggs.
Yes. Predators like fox feed on animals like birds, smaller mammals, reptiles, and amphibians, all of whom eat insects as an important part of their diets. Well, this picture is obviously not a fox. How did he get in there? Looks like a little squirrel, and he's kind of got his feet spread between two stalks of flowers. Decomposers like carrion beetles, mushrooms, and soil microbes return nutrients from animals and plants to the earth. And that's how the cycle is going around. This is a picture of the wild sunflowers. And this is a beautiful picture of a big sunflower with a little hummingbird on it. Help keep the circle unbroken, plant natives. Whether it's a square feet or several acres, we can all make a difference. And that's one of the things that was talked about a lot in many of the books that I was reading, is that if people in urban areas would add just a plant or two, you don't have to plant a whole garden full of native plants, but just provide a butterfly weed or a milkweed. And I think a lot of people get turned off by the sound of weeds, but these plants are gorgeous. Oh my gosh, some of them are so beautiful. Cardinal flowers and some of the sages, just absolutely beautiful plants. And the thing about them, the native plants don't require the care that the non-native plants do. And they're pollinators, they support the bees and the insects, and this whole circle of life starts right there. And here's a little picture of a bee, and it says, carrying on their legs the life of the planet. And this is a picture of a wild coneflowers, and this is a Cherokee prairie with a beautiful sunset. This one is compliments of Reverend Hillary Taylor. This one is Rosedale in England. It is the most beautiful, peaceful, gorgeous. It's just that one kind of brought tears in my eyes the first time I saw it. And I don't know if that's heather in the foreground, beautiful flowers, and then down to a beautiful valley and some hills behind it. So we really need to thank her for that pretty one. And here's love and gratitude. A kitten and a baby duck. And this was a cover of Birds and Blooms magazine. And it's a monarch butterfly on a purple coneflower, also known as Echinacea. Very easy to bloom, beautiful plants, and they really add a lot to your environment.
And the ones in my yard, I didn't plant. They
the
were
birds.
Volunteers.
I have sunflowers this year that I didn't plant. And when they first came up, they were clumps. I would see these clumps in the yard, and there'd be just these little twig things sticking up. And I was pulling them out. I didn't know what they were. And then one of them I let go for a little bit, and all of a sudden I realized it was a wild sunflower.
Wow.
So now I've got these patches of wild sunflowers around the yard, and they're great big sunflowers. They're not very tall, but they have the big sunflower blooms on them, and the bees are just all over them.
Yeah.
So the birds did that. and that came from the bird seed that I gave the birds.
Cool.
So I have a really big bird feeder. It's a tray with a cover on it that's open on the sides, and so it feeds a lot of birds. I have flocks that come in, and they're so enjoyable. This year, my yards started in one respect, you'd think it was going downhill. Actually, it was going uphill. It was great. I wasn't taking as good a care of my yard as I usually did, so the grasses were growing longer, less mowing, more weeds, and overgrowth. And what happened was all of a sudden I noticed that in the grass, there's a lot of clover, I had bunnies.
Wow.
And then we had families of bunnies. And they would come out and they would be in the clover. And this one little bunny, he would come out and sun himself. He went into one of the flower beds and he scraped himself a little hollow. And he would lay there and he would just stretch out in the sun. And, you know, it's so cute. And so we had that, and then I started getting a few chipmunks and squirrels that I hadn't seen in my yard for years and years. So all of a sudden, this wildlife is coming back. We've always had a possum and a raccoon that came around, but all of these other ones are coming in, and more birds than I had before. And it's because there's more shelter, there's more food, It just makes a home for them. So
no,
I've...
My mom is trying to get your attention.
Oh, are you? No, I think she's...
Let me...
What did you
want to
say?
Was it about
funny?
Before that?
Oh,
about the butterfly.
So do I.
And we have bunnies and clover flowers in our yard.
Do you? You have bunnies?
We have a garden and we have lots of, we have some flowers in the front. We have a hill with a well in the front yard.
Do you get butterflies and bees on your flowers?
Oh, not butterflies.
A couple butterflies,
I saw. A couple, but not stinging bees, but we have some wood-eating bees.
Uh-huh.
Carpenter bees. Yeah,
carpenter
bees. We have some others, too, down on the other.
Yeah.
One, 2 years ago, I guess, or was it last year, Lavani walked up to one of the little, we have the little baby rabbits that stay in the front yard, and they don't seem as shy, and Lavani
was talking
to one, and she walked right up to it about a foot away from it while she was singing to it, and it just sat there, and then it finally kind of hopped away. But it let her walk right up to it.
Wow.
Well, didn't seem afraid of her at all.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, we have deer all the time, too.
I
didn't mention those.
Oh, and?
Do you get deer at all in your yard?
Yes. And so we also saw a big, like not too big, but a big lizard with yellow and black stripes. And then we saw a smaller one. Of the copy, so there might be a family. But it's really awesome.
Cool.
Okay.
This is the butterfly milkweed, and this is the one that the monarch likes the best to lay her eggs on under. They're usually underneath the leaves. And what they're doing, I have several in my yard, and these I have had for years, and right now they're in the process of making the pods where all the seeds are. And so I've been watching them every day, because if you don't catch them just right, they open up and then they just fly away all over the place. So I'm trying to catch them at the right moment so that I can save them over winter. In fact, I bought quite a few seeds from the Prairie Moon Nursery. They have a really good selection of, you can buy plants or you can buy seeds and grow them yourself. This is one of the milkweeds. It's a pink one. I bought a few of those, and that's the monarch butterfly, and then that's the caterpillar for the monarch butterfly. What was interesting is when I went to the native nursery and I picked out a couple of these milkweed plants, and the owner of the nursery showed me that there were two caterpillars on my plants. And he said, you know, those are really special. And he said, I'm going to let you have those He said, so, you know, you'll be able to enjoy the process. So for a couple of weeks, I'd watch them every day, and they'd be there. And they just chomped the plant right down to where it looks like the plant's going to die. But once they quit eating, the plant just pops right back up again and gets more leaves. But one day I went out there, and both of them were gone, and I think the birds ate them.
Oh.
So circle of life.
Yeah.
So we have to try again. So that was the pink rose milkweed. This next one is called the common milkweed. Not too common. It's really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably about 5 different varieties of the milkweed, and they're in different colors. They're very pretty plants. And this one is called a broadleaf ironweed. And this is a thistle and a sunflower and a moth. And the thistles really make beautiful flowers. And I have a kind of a funny story about thistles, because I got really interested when I was reading about the thistles, is that the bees and the butterflies get the nectar from the thistle flowers when they're in bloom, like this picture. And then once they go to seed, then the birds eat the seeds from the thistles. And I thought, wow, you know, I should really have some thistles in my repertoire here.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't sell them at the nurseries, but they're all over the place out on the roads.
Okay.
And I had seen them, you know. So one day Jason and I were driving between Jeffersonton, where I live, and Leesburg, and we took the back roads, and I'm seeing all these plants. You know, now my eyes are on the sides of the roads all the time. And so I saw these plants along there, and they were closed up like this, and they looked, you know, just like that would look if it was closed up. And I said, oh, look, there's some thistles, and it looks like, you know, they're going to seed. And so, you know, and they had turned brown. So I thought, wow, you know, they're ready to pick. So we picked a few of them, and I brought them home. And so my neighbor, Bonnie, came over. And she said, what are you doing with those? And I said, oh, I really wanted some thistles. And she started laughing. I said, what's so funny? She says, those aren't thistles. She said, if they were thistles, you'd have to handle them with heavy gloves, because they have thorns on them that are like a half an inch long. And she said, you don't ever want to pick them unless you've got gloves. And what you've got is Queen Anne's lace. I said, Queen Anne's lace? I know what Queen Anne's lace looks like. You know, it has the big heads of the white flowers, and it's real lacy. She says, well, what happens is they close up and they form this cup. So I had, you know, I felt like the most ignorant gardener in the world. I didn't know the difference between Queen Anne's and thistle.
Well, it was good information about
really, that. Really, don't pick the thistles unless you're prepared. This is a wild plant called self-heal. So I'm interested in looking up and seeing how that's been used. I have a feeling this may be one that goes back to the Native American use.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, it's called helenium, but it's basically, it's a wild, I don't know, it kind of looks like a cross between a sunflower and a black-eyed Susan, except the middle isn't black, it's yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But that's called helenium. They're quite tall, and quite a few flowers on them. And here's a somebody that's turned their front yard into a native garden. And they're certified as a pollinator habitat. And I joined the Xerces Society, which is a foundation for saving the native plants, and also the Virginia Native Plant Society. And I want to get our yard certified as organic and also as a pollinator certified. So to encourage people that you can have beautiful yards without using Roundup we had containers left over from previous years of I've never liked using Roundup, but we had used it in the gravel road in the center. But the bees go out there too, and I just won't use any of that stuff anymore. So anyway, this is an example, and there all the societies and even the soil. In the district, let's see, what do they call it? It's a soil conservation district. They actually promote people to give up the turf and turn it into gardens or prairies. And I think Virginia will even, if you make an application for it, you can actually get financial assistance in doing it if you have a large area. Wow. And you want to turn it, take your grass and turn it into gardens or prairies. They will pay you some money for doing it. So it's important. It's the grass between all of the chemicals it takes to have green lawns and the mowing and everything. The one thing that I found with the native plants is they are just almost carefree. They're not fussy at all, and they're acclimated to where we live, and most of them are drought resistant, and they also serve a purpose of holding the soil, and so they're really a big benefit. So don't be an old stick in the mud.
Bad hair day.
Or a mangy old hound dog. Lavanya, did you see this one? That's a mangy old hound dog. It probably is. So this says, never trust your GPS. Trust your own personal guidance system. Be serene and at peace with yourself and with your world. Mm-hmm. I love that one. The swans on the water, they're so beautiful. So begin each day with a grateful heart. Filled with love. Make sure to always have fun and to play with the thunder beings playing in the sky. And remember that hugging is the most beautiful form of communication that allows the other person to know beyond a doubt that they matter. Celebrate everything. Dance with the rhythm of life. Don't worry, be happy. Here's looking at you, kid, and that's from Humphrey Bogart. The end.
Wow. Wonderful. You know, I've been trying to get a friend of mine out in West Virginia.